Hi, this is Cricket.
And this is Mimi.
And we're here with
Steven Simmons.
And we're going to do our usual hanging out, having a few drinks and talking today. So you're from Tennessee?
Woodbury, Tennessee. And originally finished school in Manchester, Tennessee, which everybody knows Manchester now because of Bonnaroo. Actually, my like high school girlfriend lived on that road where that farm is. So that's kind of weird. I actually went a few years ago. It's kind of surreal to see hordes of people grazing like cows, and just back and forth from one stage to the other, or whatever they call the stages, So, yep, grew up there, and that's an hour and a half from here.
Yeah. So you moved up here to do music, or it just coincided with each other, or?
No, I mean, I finished college, and I was living and working in Murfreesboro. Mm. And
which for everybody is a suburb of Nashville, basically.
Yeah, it's like 30 minutes away. I was living there, just got out of school, and I mean, got a job and was just playing like weekends at some little dive bar in Murfreesboro, and then I would drive up here and play like, did a few open mics, then I started doing riders rounds with people, and basically I was just testing out.
Like the Bluebird or?
Yeah. Bluebird, Douglas Corner. Probably went to Douglas Corner more than any of them. I mean, there are some other places that don't exist anymore, like Broken Spoke, and I think the Hall of Fame Lounge is still around, but I never really liked Riders Rounds, but I was just more playing a dive bar somewhere by yourself. You're kind of getting your chops up. You're kind of getting used to playing, working a crowd, and just entertaining, and they don't know when you play your own song or when you're playing somebody else's because you're not playing covers, they know.
Because they're drunk.
Yeah, and they're drunk, and then, like coming up here and doing that, it just gave you you're playing to 50 other songwriters, so it was good just to kind of see where you stacked up as a writer and see how your songs were coming across to people, and it's like the most critical, audience in the world, and because I didn't really grow up playing in bands or anything. My uncle's the one who taught me how to play guitar and stuff, and he plays and sings and has written songs, and Dad can play guitar, my grandmother can play guitar, wrote a few songs. But like as far as like playing in a band, like I knew once I got into my like mid-20s, I knew that like I wanted to expand what I was doing with my, it kept, evolving into something that I knew I needed to keep going somewhere else with it.
There was more music than just you could do.
Yeah, but for me, like, I've been writing songs ever since I was, even before I was thought it was important to even write them down. And then one day it just clicked that I should be writing it down when I was like a teenager. And that stuff, like I was the guy in college that just wrote in my room, and nobody, I didn't tell anybody, I didn't play. I might have had like a couple friends who were into that would coax it out of me or get me drunk and then try to tape it while I wasn't watching or something. But I mean, for the most part, it was just something I did completely in private. By the time I got around to like playing out and stuff, I was used to being a writer. I was used to songwriting. I had been doing that for a long time, but I wasn't used to playing with a band and playing with the rhythm section and all that stuff. So that was the other thing when I moved to Nashville. That was like, 'cause I never played band gigs in Murfreesboro or anything. I was playing writers around. So like I specifically went about trying to find guys to play with, and that was just a whole learning curve going through figuring out what I did and didn't like and who played, the way I, and just to get used to doing it. Most people that I'm friends with are either writers, they're musicians or songwriters or whatever. A lot of those guys like grew up playing in bands. They've been in, 20 bands in their life, and I didn't do that. I sat in my room and wrote songs, and played to myself and recorded it, which is completely, it's like the split personality thing, hiding and writing and all that stuff, and then people who are just strictly writers and not entertainers, that's the way they always are. But like then there's the entertainer. Like I've always thought that like people who are like singer songwriters have like a little bit of some sort of like, maybe psychotic's too strong of a word, but there's a weird split personality thing going on. There's not as much stuff going on, with like a band. Where you can do that with a band, it's more of a celebration. It's a, you're playing together, it's like, it's more the hallelujah, not the blues, where if you're playing by yourself, you can't just kill people and just take them down the gutter, just keep them there and just slit their wrist, there's nothing. I'm just saying, I've learned over time that,
So you end on the up note. basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it just depends. I mean, I totally like, I always wait and write a set list out when I'm playing by myself. Like, when I'm playing with a band, they gotta have a set list. They gotta know what we're doing. And like when I'm by myself, I wait till like right before I go on stage and write out a set list.
And you feel the room out.
Yeah, once you've seen the crowd and the space.
Yeah, I'm there, and I just kind of sit there and see how the situation feels.
Do you want to play a song?
Sure.
Okay.
Filling station signs light up the cold dead night with their number-driven art advertising prices. Now they're all alone once more in this truck. Won't stay warm, man. Humility reveals itself priceless. It's just about all the time I got. Figure out all the things I'm not. It's just about all the time I'll need. Time's all we are, is just still will be. My baby's safe at home, and she don't know why I roam. And someone I love so much, I shouldn't have to try so. But these lights in my dark sky, man-made bulbs and hard copper wire, and I'm heaven remote and the stars are glowing. Just about all the time I got. Figure out all the things I'm not. It's just about all the time I'll need. Sometimes all we are is just who we'll be. And there's just so many roads where a man could be at home while alone and driving. And something you said to me last night, I just can't get out of my mind. That this time you'll feel trying. Funny how some thoughts in your mind only slip out when you're driving and seem to disappear at other times. Like that outfit that you wore, baby, for my birthday, so crazy. It wasn't worth the price, but the memory's timeless. It's just about all the time I got. Figure out all the things I'm not. It's just about all the time I need. Sometimes all we are is just who we'll be. Their CD release show, 80s Attic in Decatur, Georgia, like a few weekends ago. But yeah, they're great.
Yeah, so you want to play some other song?
Sure. He was pretty sure he didn't believe in heaven, and he wasn't quite sure. I almost lost that last son of a bitch. After 50 years of damn hard work, there he is.
here to say it should get a little better. This world is going straight to hell. And they ain't never stood on this side of the shovel. Hell ain't a kingdom, it's a hole if you can't tell. It looks so easy, sounds so damn simple. Take these souls fall right out of the sky. Jesus, back off this one's mine. Working all day, hustling and a slave, and just another soul somebody thought they could save. Chalk me up, number one. Devil's word. So damn clever, forgiveness, and you talk about love. About busting my ass, and it's high time to show some respect for work I've done. You cry when you lose him, you bleed for every last one. A bunch of soul losers is what I. Chalk me up another one. Devil's work is never done. You guys seem to get all the good ones, the poor and the needy and the downtrodden masses. Seems like the whole deck stacked against them. Still, I can never break from their hearts with the truest of the past. It seems like all you ever leave me, these poster child souls who think they're above the fold. You know the ones with their high profiles, but they got no timber down in their souls. The famous and the powerful, those deceitful wages of wars. All those goddamn politicians, the very ones that evoke your name for damn folklore. And it looks so easy, sounds so damn simple. These souls don't fall out of the sky. Jesus, back off this one's mine. Working all day, hustling and asleep. Chalk me up another one. Devil's work is never done. Devil's work is never done. He was pretty sure he didn't believe in heaven. And he wasn't quite sure. Now I almost lost that lousy son of a bitch after 50 years of damn hard work.
That song rules.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that song is amazing.
So most recently, the most recent album we have out is Drinker and Jesus.
Yes.
And we'll link to that so that everybody can find it. But you have another one coming out in the spring, is that right?
Yeah, I have a record that I just finished. We actually tracked it and recorded it back in the winter. We were probably through with it, with tracking, overdubbing, and everything, like, before March. So we did it in January, February, And then mixing, mastering, and all that stuff was a few months. But it's been done since the summer, and it's just a matter of... I was just putting out the Drink Ring Jesus record after I'd already recorded this other one. Kind of needed to give it a little time.
Right.
I actually wasn't planning on the Drink Ring Jesus record. I did it acoustically, and I did it just right across the street from you guys, Chapel, at Eastwood Studios, which is Eric Fritch, who was playing keys with me and guitar last night, the basement. He co-produced, he produced and engineered my first record, Last Call, at his studio over there on Chapel. He engineered, there's not much production to do on the second one, it's just acoustic record. I had this back, I had a couple of the song Drink Ring Jesus and the song Devil's Work, and I was like, gosh, I knew I was getting ready to make a different kind of record that none of that stuff was going to fit on. So I just thought, well, what I want to do is I kind of want to get some of this stuff down. And as I was looking at it, I was like, okay, I'm just going to do an EP and put these four or five songs that seem to go together. And then as I was kind of shoring up the lyrics and everything, I wrote a bunch of other songs that kind of fit in there, and I finished some others, and so I thought, okay, so it's going to be 10 songs. And I just thought, I'm just going to do acoustic because it's all real spiritual stuff. Just leave it like that, guitar, harmonica. And then I went to put it out in this little label overseas. They're not that little, but it's Rounder Europe.
Oh,
yeah,
that's not a little.
Yeah, that's not really that little.
No, not so much.
That sounds demeaning to say little.
But they're separate
right. From Rounder America. They're linked, and they put out Rounder's records over there, but they also do things that Rounder here doesn't out.
Yeah.
For somebody that's still relatively unknown, and it's acoustic record, and it's
So this is Drink Ring Jesus.
Yeah.
That you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seem to blow.
it's called?
Shine. That puppy's never been recorded. Yay! It's still a speckled pup under a rose bush. Radio has changed so much in the last 15 years, or since the 90s when they deregulated everything, and so it's become more...
Yeah, the whole Clear Channel
phenomenon. Yeah. I mean, like, you could grow up listening to mainstream commercial music and get emotional content from it.
Right.
Even, for sure, the late 80s.
Yeah.
But even the early 90s, you could still get stuff. But it's amazing how closely it coincides with them deregulating even further and allowing people to buy more and more stations. And they just said, okay, well, it was in 95 or 96, whenever they signed that, well, I don't remember, the telecommunications deregulation, whatever. All of a sudden, now you buy all these stations in this market, and your country station, we're going to market that to, like, 35 to 50-year-old housewives, you know.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, the John Michael Montgomerys and the Love Ballad was it. And they completely lost all their male listenership.
Right.
And they have another station that would be like our 102.9 The Buzz here, that is like, you know, like some kind of...
Cock rock.
Yeah, cock rock, corn, or I don't even know what it is. Right, I don't even know who those people are, you know, but they would try to get the testosterone younger crowd there. That, you know what I mean? It's like, and so they just split all the things up to try to, you know, go after certain markets, and they just cut the balls out of country completely. Even in, like, early 90s, like, and you could even watch it happen with some of the guys that came out in the late 80s. Like,
I'm going to go with Lee Greenwood, okay, and that I'm Proud to Be American song. I remember when that song came out, obviously during the first Gulf War. I remember how, like, you couldn't go anywhere and not hear that song. It didn't matter where you were.
Do you think that came out during the Gulf War?
I thought it did. Was it earlier than that?
Every time we go to war, it has a lot, and you lie.
I thought it was the first Gulf War, wasn't it?
He's probably been made a millionaire. How many wars we've been in the last 20 years? Yeah. No, that song was a hit in, like, probably early 80s.
Really?
Wow.
No, I didn't know that.
It was cast off to the land of, you know,
sentimentality, crap.
Lefty Frizzell and anybody, Dan Seals, and anybody else that had been buried in the 80s, it was gone, and then... Desert Storm rolled around, and then some bitch was like a hit again,
and not just a hit. Okay, I think hit is not even describing
what that song was. And after 9/11,
and
all that stuff, here it comes again. It's like,
but the thing is, things have changed so much. So then this time around, you see where all the guys who are in mainstream country all make their own version of that. So you have like even somebody like Alan Jackson, who is like not a horrible songwriter.
No.
He like writes a song basically, you know, to pay for, I guess, his house in Tahiti or whatever.
Yeah.
Based around the same mentality, because it was obvious to the people who were marketing the Lee Greenwood song that if you have a song that's like Rah Rah USA, you're going to make $1 billion.
Yeah. You could see guys like Travis Tritt, Clint Black, Alan Jackson, maybe Garth Brooks. I'm trying to think. There's a slew of guys that came out right as the 80s were coming to a close.
Right.
If you heard, I mean, Clint Black's first record. It's insane. It's so good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it his
talent, or is it the talent of the production
team? Oh, no. No. He was working construction in Houston and playing bars at night.
Right.
And those were all songs he brought with him to Nashville. And he was probably a mid-30-year-old man by that time. You know, whatever he was, I don't know. But he wasn't a boy. He wasn't a little... I started to say that sounds bad. But he wasn't some... guy that just graduated from Belmont that has spiked hair and wants to be a pop star.
Right.
And there's nothing against Belmont.
Belmont
got a lot of friends
is a school
that went
here
there.
In Nashville, guys. Yeah. Everybody doesn't know.
Which, by the way, Waylon Jennings said that when they built music program at Belmont, that would be the death of country music. He did say that.
Really?
Back in the 70s or 80s.
Oh, we worship Waylon, so he must be right.
He must be right.
I mean, I've got friends at Belmont. I'm just saying... That's pop country music. Those are people that are, you know.
Well, they have the whole marketing school there, whatever it is, the economics of country music program and all that stuff there.
But somebody like Clint Black, who worked construction and just wanted to be a country singer like Merle Haggard, and he came here with all these great... The songs on that record are so good. And it's great. The second, third, fourth records, you know, like... I mean, I was a teenager then, but, like, it was kind of tailing off, you know? But, like, when mid-90s hit... He's a pop balladeer. You know what I mean? He's like
all of the
singing.
Songs I know are those.
Yeah, it's all like, you know, like these, When I Said I Do, I Love You Forever. And it's like, I mean, just the testosterone got stripped out of it. Travis Tritt, same thing. He's like this southern rocker from Georgia that came up here, and Hellraiser, and like had just great guitar player, great singer, freaking great singer. But all those guys, like mid-90s, if you go back and listen to that stuff then, it's, and I'm sure it was the label and all that stuff chasing the radio, because they got to get that to generate, it's all based on getting spins, so they were chasing whatever radio was saying, nope, you know, that song, you know, does not put some drive in your country, which was great in 89 or 90 or whatever that was when I was in high school. And everybody, you know, you could go to that, like you could go to a Hank Jr. concert, you know, if you were a teenager, you could go to that, just like you could go to a Van Halen show.
Right.
You know, you could go to that, you can go to Bo Cephas, you could go to a Travis Tritt concert, or you Guns N' Roses, you could go to that stuff. But by 1995, that was gone. Like,
right.
You were, you know, you
I think you're the same age we are, and I'm from the Deep South as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Where, like, you could listen to, like, Van Halen or whatever, and then turn around and be listening to, like the big, like, hard-rocking country singers at the same time.
And they have tried to go back after male listenership, and, like, a lot of stations like Clear Channel are starting to get, they're starting to get rid of some, it's not worked as a business model, and they're scaling back.
I think partially this is also satellite radio singers.
Yeah, all that stuff is, and plus they just drove it in the ground. People can't just listen to the same 15 songs.
Right.
But what you're talking about, like with the pro-America war stuff and everything, that's introducing some testosterone back into country music.
That's what Toby Keith is, basically.
Right. But it's not, it's like this, it's only introducing one kind of male bravado kind of, you know, testosterone back in.
It's
only one, surface stuff, and it's only one viewpoint, you know.
Right.
I mean,
but not everybody can be Waylon, right? And sing about, like, I would pass out in the bar last night, and then also I love my woman so much, I'm gonna like reform myself.
Yeah,
you know.
This is and Waylon to me, like, he's the ultimate example of this. But Hank Williams was that way, and you could probably name some of your favorite bands or artists that'd be that way. But Waylon is like the ultimate example of this to me. It's like, and I took my dad to see him. We went and saw him like back in the late 90s. And
I'm very jealous.
His health was like he had to sit in a chair.
Yeah.
They had him like this swivel chair made for him so he couldn't walk around and stuff and stand. And they were recording it for some record, and it was at the Ryman. And I was just sitting there thinking, I was like, you know, it was like that's the thing. It's like when somebody makes that kind of connection with people, it's that. It's like, I mean, you can market somebody and do all that other stuff, but if you go watch somebody like Waylon, like a guy takes his girl to see Waylon, I mean, the girl wants to go home with him and the guy wants to be him. You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? It's
totally.
It's like, it's both. It's like the girl wants him. She's like, God, you know, I wish, he's, you know, and it's like, and I mean, there's times when he looked pretty rough. But you hear women talk about Waylon. It's like people talk about him, and it's like you see these women talk about, they swoon. You know, it's like Hank Williams, like the same thing. You hear people say the same thing. Like, guys watch him and think, damn, I wish I was that dude. Like, he's so cool. And then, like, girls are sitting there thinking, oh, you know, and it's like that kind of thing is lost on, I don't know, maybe we never get back there with, like, maybe there's not a way to be commercial anymore, and be, you know what I mean. Like,
I don't know if there's a way to be commercial. I think it's become so widespread because people have so many options now for listening to music. I mean, you have a satellite radio, you have, you know, all the options on the internet, you have like all the ways that you can choose now to just listen to the music that you want to listen to. But I mean, there's definitely Dare Watson is a prime example of a guy who has that kind of draw. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but we love him.
Maybe on a psychotic level.
But he really has that same kind of like sort of visceral draw for like both sexes and the kind of music that he writes and the way that he presents himself. But he's not famous. I mean, he's
famous. And by the way, he's not famous.
He's not
going to
be.
He's not going to be. He's famous in Texas. Texas, everyone knows him.
But you know, there is a whole. I'm not telling you guys anything you probably don't know, but like he would fit in that category. There's a whole like Dale Watson in a Merle Haggerty kind of way, Bruce Robinson in a Don Williams kind of way. There's just so many people out there. Buddy Miller in a Hank Williams kind of way. I just remember watching Buddy Miller the first time and thinking it was so country, it was so soulful, it was so good, and the vibe was just. incredible. Like, his wife was spinning around and beating on a pizza box or something, you know, and like playing percussion literally like on a box. And like, he's just, and I was sitting there watching him play and I was like, man, it's all old, but it's all new.
Right.
Which is sometimes why I can't get as much into some like, maybe rockabilly and even bluegrass and some stuff that feels too formulaic. I can't get into it because it feels like it's just, you know, the same thing. And like, when I hear something like that, it's like, he just rocked out and it's so old school vibe, but it's like something different, you know? Right. And it's like,
Interestingly is exactly what I was thinking. I have written in my notes about you when we saw you play last
night. Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I'd say that you may be accomplishing what you're saying.
But I mean, when I saw him, I remember thinking, I thought, man, this has got to be what somebody felt like when they saw Hank. Mm-hmm. You know, like the first thought, because you know, you hear all these stories, like, you know, about those guys being literally rock stars, you know,
right.
And they traveled in much more rudimentary forms than we're traveling now, but like,
or Ernest Tubb. That's Ernest like what Tubb, you they always say he hear was, about him.
It yeah. was just
tore
like
the town down.
Like Beatles. Yeah. Like yeah. girls just, you know, yeah. it's like, because it was just so different and it was so cutting edge and they just had that thing, you know, and it's like, and you see Buddy Miller and like, there's this whole generation of people that are probably, most of them are in their 40s that like could have been, they were the next wave of like legitimate Haggards and
real kind
Don
of
Williams and. I think of somebody like John Conley, you know, who was like early mid-80s was his main career. It's us. He's like this tall, and he's like, he was a mortician in Kentucky. I don't know how he got it. But his voice, like, he sings the blues. I mean, it's country, but it's country blues. And I mean, it's like, I remember being a little kid and just like wearing those records out when my dad would buy, you know, like Busted, you know, when it came out. And I know every word to every song on that record. It's just the blues, but it's like, nobody can, like, Randy Travis. I was talking to somebody the other day about Randy Travis, and it's like, his voice. It's nuts how good Randy Travis's singing voice is.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was talking about, there's some newer guy that's a...
Yes, his name is Josh Turner.
Yeah, who everybody's like, they keep saying Randy Travis.
His voice is that good.
And it's really low, really...
It's very sexy, and very, also, like, emotional.
Yeah, but... It does not have, like, maybe I'm just not the right age
anymore.
I
think he's too young, so he's not actually gotten to the full, like, power of his voice, which is, like, actually, when you're 35 or something like that is, like, a singer?
Maybe I'm not in the right place. Yeah. Maybe I'm just not as open to it as I would have been, but, like, I listen to that, and I listen to Randy Travis, and I'm just like, I don't hear the same soul. I don't hear the same, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't hear the same, he doesn't make, like, I hear it, and I'm like, it's got a great voice, but I don't have that emotional response that I do of hearing Randy Travis.
I don't think
Travis.
His songs are right.
Do you remember the song Promises, by the way? I was talking to somebody about that, by Randy Travis. It'll kill you, you know, because he's so... I think it's more than just his physical voice. I think it's his... I think it's something else in here, you know, like in his heart or his soul or something, because Randy Travis
it's phrasing, and it's the emotional resonance that you really get from something.
He had a rough upbringing, and when he sings that, I believe him. Somebody gave me the best advice in the world, and they were just like, break down what you love. You know, go break down songs that you love, and I mean, I broke down songs by Springsteen, and I broke down Lucinda Williams and Steve Earle songs. But I mean, it's like, and you can say what you want about those artists, and they've got this, you know, ragged but rod and rough and blah, blah, blah. That writing is, it's tight. It's, you know, it's flawless. You know what I mean? And it may be some unusual rhyme scheme or some unusual this, that, or the other, but there is not only form there, there is like, somebody has gone through and written and rewritten, and like, it is just they've got all of the cool stuff. They know they reached up there and they tapped into that thing and pulled that back, and then they got it so it was just solid so that we get it, you know, and you don't forget the second verse to whatever song on Car Wheels on a Gravel Road by Lucinda Williams, because it's the same rhyme scheme as, say, the first verse.
Right.
You know, and it's consistent. And you've got
solid songwriting.
And you've got all those great lines And yet, it's like a John Prine song. It's like, bam, bam, bam. That line's great. That line's great. But you don't forget it because it's like a good poem. It flows and it has structure to it.
It has metaphor that is consistent throughout the entire thing.
Players. All right.
There are bulls here in this county, and the reason she would run into another grave. Let's show you how it's done. Drag you through these gravel roads and blind you in the shine. Make you wanna lose your breath, make you wanna lose your mind. There are girls here in this county that tease you with the love, control you with a wink, where to smell the wind. This county goodbye. Things down here don't ever change. It's just the way they're done. Before you're ever born, you decided for your son. Boys is like his daddy and his grandpa on and on. Makes it hard to leave behind. So easy to get from. And you may think you have some saying when your car goes. If you drive all over town, forever. You'll be sick when you wake up and realize it's gone. Yeah, you stay there all your life. Your life will do you wrong. County lines running funny away. Once it's drawn up, they don't ever change. Say you can't go. Take one more step and kiss this county goodbye. You keep moving and try to leave it behind. Just wind up in some other small town. Not to bug a county line.
Lovely little throat lozenges that have some kind of little honey, lemony coated thing in them that I eat them like candy when I'm out on the road, because after a gig, it's not the singing that gets me, mm-hmm. it's the staying out in a bar and then I'm talking over another band to people
right.
and talk, you know, you're there
along,
and,
yeah.
and it's like, that's pushing your voice and trying to talk over people in a loud smoky bar, blah, blah, blah. this is another song off of the new record.
What's it called?
It's called We'll See. Last night I took drunk with all the passion. This morning I'm hungover with regret.
Your medicine won't make me feel better. It's too soon, yeah. And you don't even know me, baby. So what makes you think that I won't leave? I don't even know you, baby. So I guess that we'll see. We'll see. Stopped and picked up some bread on my way home. Found a resolve, something sweet to get this remorse off my. I eat my supper cold. Still it burns when it comes. You don't even know me, baby. What makes you think that I won't leave? And I don't even know you. I guess that we'll see. We'll see. Went into work early this morning. No use in hanging around where I know that I'm not one. It's work for you and me. We pretend that we don't. We see. We see. You don't even know me. Babies, what makes you think that I won't leave? I don't even know you, baby. So I guess that we'll see. We'll see.
Drag your heart down and just like pull it across the concrete song.
And then stop on it.
And your voice is great.
It's almost gone tonight. It's a little extra raspy. I got some friends from East Tennessee and that's their big joke. You know, everything's a little extra. But yeah, that's my, that's the upbeat song on the new record.
Oh, that's the, yeah. Oh, really? Did you have a big breakup?
Oh.
You don't have to say
that. You don't have to answer that.
Well, you know, it's funny, but it's not funny. It sucks, but...
It's funny in that way, but it's not funny at all.
It's odd, yeah. It's odd. I had a list of about 70, 75 tunes that I was basically was going to be on this new record. There were things I didn't see me doing.
So just a couple.
Well, and I got it down to like, but over, you know, like by the time I made Lux Call, then I ended up Drink Ring Jesus turned into a real record release right. thing, you know, whatever. And so by the time I get to it, it's like I got this, you know, massive list of all these songs that fit it, and it bumped songs that I would have sworn were going to be on that record. And
right.
The record's been in my, you know, the record's been in my head for 5 years, the concept and the songs. And by the time I get around to it, it's like I've written other songs that bump things off, you know. And then you get down to like 25, and then you get down to, because I was working with a new producer, edited myself down to about 15. I was so proud, you know, and I was like, maybe I gave him 14. I was like, these 14.
Right.
These are it. And then we go, we did some pre-production work and stuff and everything, and then maybe it was 15, something like that. And then we took it, Christmas was coming up, and I was going through last phases of a relationship that had been going downhill for a little while. And ironically, a lot of the songs on the record were from like my last serious relationship, which was like 3 years before that. And like, but I ended up writing this whole batch of like other relationship songs. And so when we came back at Christmas, we were talking about songs. I was like, well, I got a bunch more that kind of fit the same theme. I was like, it's a different girl, but it's, you know, it's like, and
but nobody will know that but you.
Yeah, no, yeah. Every time I play somewhere, all the press clippings and everything, it all has to do with saints, sinners, devils, angels, and that's fair. I brought that on myself, you know. It's like I have, but like my first record was like, it was story songs, you know. Right. And there are probably 3 or 4 murder ballads on that record, you know, and there's not overt spiritual stuff. It, you know what I mean? It touches on some of those themes, but it's only in the way that it's about small town, you know, these characters and people that get in the wrong situation, make wrong choices and have to pay for them the rest of their life.
Right.
And like Drink, Ring, Jesus is a collection of, I don't know, some of them almost sound like prayer. Some of them sound like a gospel song, and then like The Devil's Work Is Never Done. I don't know what you call that. To me, I think it's a folk song.
I call it great. How about you?
But I mean, I think it's a folk song.
Well, it sounds like a political folk song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, with a sinister twist. But I mean, there's a couple stories that, like that one, who are sung, that are sung from the devil's perspective. And then there's others that's, you know, somebody praying, you know, who's in a tough position, and he's praying that, you know what I mean? It's spiritual, but it's like all the different angles they're very, you know, one song on there is, I never think anybody gets it because it's really more about like quantum physics and DNA and stuff, really, and how it ties in with spirituality, you know. To me, it's what it's about, but I mean, I don't want to ruin it for somebody else if they think it means something else to them.
Except that you play another song? One more?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Trying to find the silver lining in this cloud. Trying to take a beat up old guitar. Trying to find the sound. I'm down in the floor. And I'm out in the trash. And I'm the ashtray over in the corner. But you never clean out. Baby, you're gone and you ain't never gonna look back. And I'm the type of guy, you know, I ain't never been good at that. If I can't ride on the train, I just as soon lay on the tracks. Thank you. I see you driving down the road. You're just in your mirror. Turn it over to the other side so you can't see me here. But I'm under your hood, the plugs and the wires. So spinning out of control, down in the tracks of your tires. Baby, you're gone and you ain't never. I'm the type of guy, you know I ain't never been good at that. So if I can't ride on the train, just a simple lay on the tracks.
That were in East Nashville and an actual train didn't go by while the song
was playing. Do you know that in the past, in this calendar year, that has happened to me twice at a gig?
Really? Trains gone by?
And when I say go by, I mean like pin your ears back, go by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once was in, it's Ashland, Virginia, which I'm actually going back there next week. First time I played there was back in like March sometime. It's in this little... it's like a little suburb kind of outside of Richmond. And there's a, it's the address is Railroad Avenue. Like, you know, it's like, and it's like the railroad is like there. And then there's like one lane big enough for your car to drive through. And then here's the club. And it's like all the businesses are like right on the train. The train still runs. People still take the commuter train through there. Mm-hmm. And the whole one, that side of the club that's on the train side, it's all glass. So when a train does come by, right, it's like, you know, and like right in the last chorus of that song, right when I went to blow on the harp, it just goes, and like just starts going, whoa, 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 just going by. And like everybody just started just cheering, you know, and like, you know, whatever. And it was one of those like, and I mean, I had to make a joke about it because it was just so like, geez, that's bizarre, you know, and like, but I mean, that train runs fairly regularly, but that was the first time it had happened since we had started the show. It was not, so it's like, you know, the lights are on.
Yeah.
It's funny because my buddy's Last Train Home, that's the name of their band, and they would play after me. I was opening for them, and they have a bunch of songs about trains, and like two or three times he hit a train song and goes, and he would sing something about the train and be like, you know, and nothing would happen, you know, and finally at the end, like finally a train came back through, and he's like, geez, how did you do that? And I was in Missouri a few months ago. I was playing an outdoor gig out on the like the square, and it was like in this gazebo, and it's like this community, like they do one a month, you know, where the city pays.
Right, for the lunchtime concert type thing.
Yeah, it's like six, like yeah. Early evening, yeah. And there's no alcohol, although
right.
The bars.
Everybody
just
brings
behind
their
them.
Kids, yeah. Kids running around.
And
don't drink.
Yeah, don't drink. And I went and but same thing. The train runs right by because it's right on the river. It's Cape Girardeau. It's like one of the older towns in America, but because I guess the French went straight up the Mississippi, and it's even though
you expected to say America, like in that sentence, that was a really funny delivery. One of the oldest towns in America.
Yeah, I don't know what else. I mean, I was sitting there going, I guess the and it is, you know. I was like, but I started to say just in Missouri, and I was like,
no,
in America, it's one of the oldest towns in America. But they. And, like, same thing right when I was playing that song, like, that damn train went by. And, I mean, we were outside, and it was just like, and it just was like, of course, they couldn't see us, you know, but right. They were, like, right behind there. That's happened to me twice this year.
That's pretty awesome.
And it happens.
How many dates a year do you do?
I think about 60, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it, you know what I mean? I think it fluctuates. I mean, like, there's some months I might do 20 shows. Mm-hmm. And then there's some months I might play every weekend for a few months. And then, like last fall, I think I played only a few times a month for like 2 or 3 months. I took a few months off.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? It's so like
up
and down. And like this spring, I played a lot. And then early summer, I was changing and using this other person to book me. And
I was going
to
ask you that. Do you don't book yourself? You
I have been booking myself up until this year. And somebody booked me earlier this year, and they didn't, they weren't able to keep me as busy as I was able to keep myself.
When you were doing it.
Yeah.
And that was somebody here locally?
No, it was somebody okay. that was, yeah, right. they were like in Atlanta or something. So like, but then now I've got, actually there's somebody, there's a little company in Virginia, and this girl there books me now, and I mean, she just started doing it, but she's pretty much booking like O7 and stuff. You know? Mm-hmm. She's booking stuff like in January and next summer, as weird as that is. But, yeah, but I mean, it's like when I was booking myself, I mean, I just, you know, I bought a little crappy laptop to take on the road just so I could check my email. But then there'd be days when I just, you know, you go days when you couldn't really get online, or you were at some crappy Starbucks, you had to pay $10 to get online to use the T-Mobile thing. Or,
except that now that you can always go to Crystal and get online.
Really?
Most of the Crystals have free wireless now, yeah.
But like, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
so you can get your Crystal check and get online.
And get online.
But it's like, so like, it's just, it was really, it was getting, the more I played, the harder it was getting
right.
to book myself. And I've met so many people over the last few years, and you learn to like, you're like, oh, I'm playing here. Well, I know so-and-so over there. Does he have a show? Does this happen? And like, I could float. I could be gone for like 10 days. Mm-hmm. Like where now that somebody's booking me, every day will be like a show worth doing, or I'll be home, you know, which
right.
is nice. And it's like, and also.
So you mainly play venues the size of the basement, or bigger venues than that?
I think it just depends. Most of them are those kind of, it seems like every town has that kind of club.
Right.
You know, like that size club that's pretty good. And every now and then I get someplace and be like, what the hell's going on here? Like, you know.
Because it's large?
Or? Yeah, or a little bigger. But I mean, and festivals are, you know.
Right.
Festivals are the biggest thing I do, you know. I mean, but I don't ever play anywhere bigger than, I mean, Mercy Lounge is pretty damn big.
Yeah.
You know, City Hall, I mean, like, I don't play places out on the road. Like, I mean, I played City Hall one time here, but I'm just saying, like, you know what I mean? It's like, if I didn't live here, I probably wouldn't. You
right.
wouldn't be, unless you're on a lot. There are a lot of bigger booking agencies that have package, you know, artists, things, you know, whatever. And, you know, if you're not really in with one of those, you're only going to, you know what I mean? Like, you can, I've got somebody now that's really, really good, but, like, she can't just guarantee, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
it only makes sense for her to book me because I've been doing this for about 3 years, pretty, you know, been playing.
So you had to work to get in with that company.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because otherwise, why
and
would
so you? How do you, like, do you think it's because you consistently showed up at your gigs that they were willing to take you, or that you got a certain body of material, or just your personality, or?
Well, being able to meet up with other acts that were.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, they can just take one glance at my calendar and look at my past tour dates and go, okay, well, he's played all these places on his own. He's gotten into all these places over the
right.
last few years. You
so
know, that's the hard work. That's the
ass.
Hard work.
Right.
Like, I've already kind of, like, done a lot of the grunt work of mm-hmm. getting in all these, you know, getting in five different places in Knoxville, mm-hmm. getting in five different places in Memphis and Atlanta.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to introduce me to so-and-so and so-and-so. And
right.
then also, you know, I mean, I've got a new record coming out, and I've done a couple full-length records, and I mean, managed to get some, you know what I mean? You get press and you get some
right.
radio play, and it's like,
so
and then
you've had radio play.
Yeah, but it's all Americana radio. So
well,
it
doesn't matter. Don't
well,
put yourself down.
No, I'm not putting myself down. I'm just saying that doesn't reach a lot of people.
Right.
Is all I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
We know.
I mean, most of them are tied to universities and stuff. And so it's like, you know, if they spin your record a couple of times a week, you know what I mean? It's like in Johnson City, that's great. But it's like, you're not...
Statistically, the possibility
yeah,
of reaching an audience.
Yeah, you're not reaching
advanced,
that many people.
Yeah.
And so when you go play the Down Home in Johnson City, there's only a few people that happen to catch your show, happen to see you're playing there, and are going to come. And, you know, if everybody saw your show, if everybody heard you, they wouldn't all come.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got fewer people that hear you, fewer people that see about it, you know what I mean? It's just...
But the thing also, though, is that I find, especially with acts, like with the kind of material you do, the dedicated fan actually is maybe better for you than...
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, there's a thing about Americana fans, you know, and stuff. I mean, they're like folk music fans, you know.
And they pimp the people they like to other people, and it's like a whole network.
Yeah, I'll totally find my name and stuff about me on somebody else's message board.
Right.
Sometimes by accident, I'll come across. Well, it'd just be funny. You'll just be reading something somebody's talking about you on somebody else's message board, or somebody will come to your show and they'll tell you they drove 2 hours because, you know, you don't ever come anywhere near where they are, and you're like, or they're riding down, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's like,
Yes, that's great.
I mean, you know, I drove to Lexington to see Springsteen because he didn't come to Nashville, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, so if somebody would drive 2 hours to come see me, I mean, but it is like folk music. It is like it's a club. It's a, you know, it's like people are, they want to share it, and any kind of niche music, I think, is like that. You know, it's there's a certain amount of, you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain amount of, like, oh, wow, look what I found.
Can you do a cover song for us? Because we asked you to do that. Do you know any?
Any cover song?
Any obscure, like, random cover song that you like.
I think this one's obscure. It's not obscure to y'all, probably.
Look to your top, it's like the coast from Johnny Nine.
what that was, Stephen.
That is Johnny 99 off Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen.
Which we hope everybody that's listening to this already owns Nebraska. Because if they don't, we're coming to their houses personally with a copy of it.
Let's see. I don't know if that's obscure enough, but, you know, it makes it more interesting if I don't know if I'm going to remember something. You know, like, you get a few extra butterflies, like, when you get to the, you know, you're like, okay, am I doing this? So.
Did I skip a verse?
Yeah. It makes it more interesting. Plus, you know, but you gals living in East Nashville. How long have y'all been in Nashville?
Since May.
May? Let's try it.
There's folk stars in East Nashville, country wannabes downtown. Look up to all the has-beens of Brentwood's mansions. Got kids in the malls, tattooed pissing Pall Mall smokers. All think that Johnny Cash on the moon. With the slim trendy girls out near the Five Points. Hard candy bandy girls out west is such a joy. There's well-adjusted, well-kept girls in all them Bellevue houses. But none of them will ever let me stay for long. And I'm singing each night for my supper. Folks ask me how I'm doing and they can't tell. I stretch the truth till it sounds right, but my stomach tells me things ain't going too well. And my friends back home all say that they're pulling for me. It's such a tough business, they say it seems. Shrug my shoulders, say la vie, I'm rolling with the punches. It's damn sure good work if you can get it. So I hang out with my cousin and smoke his good weed, and have lunch with my uncle and let him buy mine for me. And I find an old lost love man just in time for supper. And ask my brother if Lowe's is hiring this month. I'm singing each night for my supper. Folks ask me how I'm doing and they can't tell. I stretch the truth till it sounds just right, but my stomach tells me things ain't going too well.
Calling it the Cricket and Mimi song in parentheses, empty.
Yeah, because we always have to have one. Let's clear the name. Also, I have a feeling that we are going to be able to say we knew Stephen Simmons before he was Stephen Simmons. Like, all capital letters. We
already use all capital letters.
Do you? In block friends.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
You ever study, my mom had this book on handwriting and signatures. Mm-hmm. And, it's very interesting, actually. I don't know if you've ever... It's like, because it, like, analyzes, you know, the way people's writing and stuff. And I was looking at the way I signed my name. And artists and politicians, oddly enough, all do this thing where they make huge, like your first letter of your first and last name, like this huge letter, and then, like, little bitty, like, writing after that. Yeah. And
oddly enough, that's how I signed my name.
And they showed, like, Bruce Springsteen and Ronald Reagan's. And it's like, the guy writing the book, his theory was that it's the big letter is you, and the rest of it is everybody else.
Because right.
apparently, you see yourself as towering above everybody right. else, and it's like they were talking. There, it was all artists.
Totally not true yeah. in any way.
It was like
except for Mimi, it's true.
Yeah. yeah,
except artists, but it was like artists and politicians were like the main one. Ronald Reagan is like these huge, like yeah, ours take up half the page, and like you couldn't even see is like Bruce Springsteen. And the other thing is that was true. That's one thing because I was like, well, gosh, because I'm gonna make these giant S's, you know, and like just you can barely read. There's something with like some people being artistic or certain kinds of intelligence, not across the board intelligence, being people that write real small and very precise and neat. And that's a little more in depth.
Mathematicians tend to write like that. Yeah, actually.
That's more in depth, but like, and the other thing I took from it is people that if they're like when they write in cursive and they like the last little thing, if they hook it back around, you're covering, like that means you're guarded and you're not open.
Total crap.
And like, and I, if you look at my signature, between the overarch of my first S and the last S coming back around, sometimes they almost touch. I've got like a whole canopy.
You've got like the whole.
I got a bubble.
Bigger than everybody else and guarded.
And guarded. And I was just reading that and I was like, huh. And I was like, you know, some things I was looking at, like my brother writes like that, my mom or whatever, but anyways, it's pretty interesting.
Well, you've taught me that I have serious ego issues.
I could have told you that.
Hardy har har, rim shot.
Cool.
here on this blue ridge. Blue's what my heart would be if to you I did not give everything to you from the start. Or I might as well just leave tonight and let this town just break my heart. They say heaven's far away for a boy who's lived this way. There's no meanness in your world. Everything is beautiful when you're just a Nashville girl.
We're actually considering knocking out the doors and keeping Steven here forever. But we might want to sign off before we do that, so that we're not.
So we don't go to jail?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know, so they don't
have
Nashville
any... cops, you know.
Yeah.
So thanks, y'all, for coming and listening. Steven Simmons was here. I'm Cricket.
I'm Amy.
I'm Steven. Thanks for having me.
We have a bunch of other stuff coming up for that is the same stuff we've been promising forever, but it's still coming. We'll see y'all soon.